Welcome back to the KPL Podcast. I'm your host, Jagisha. Don't you just love heist books or movies? This week on the podcast, I have Alex Hay, and we will be talking about his book, The Housekeepers. This is a heist book set in the early 1900s, and all of the thieves are women. So think Ocean's 8 meets Downton Abbey. I had a lot of fun talking to Alex, so let's just get started with the interview.
So welcome to the podcast, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
So tell us about yourself, just to begin with.
Of course, I am delighted to introduce myself. So I'm Alex Hay, and I'm the author of The Housekeepers, which is a historical heist set in London in the summer of 1905, telling the story of Mrs. King, a very sharp-witted, cool-headed housekeeper to one of Mayfair's grandest mansions, who, on being unfairly dismissed from her post after many years of loyal service, decides that she's going to enact her revenge by carrying out one of the most audacious robberies that high society has ever seen. So think the Ocean's franchise crossed with Downton Abbey, and you're halfway there, and it's my debut, so a very thrilling and exciting moment to be sending out into the world. I've been writing for as long as I can remember, that well-worn author phrase, and therefore having a story coming out into the world for the first time is both wonderful and terrifying in equal measure.
Well, I really love the book. As soon as I saw the word heist, I was like, yes, this is my book. This is for
Hooray!
Me.
well, I mean, I think we're in the heistgeist at the moment because there's been a fantastic glut of heists coming out over the past year. And it's really lovely, actually, to see that plot structure have its moment in the sun. So, yay, hooray for the heist.
Yes. So what inspired the story?
Well, I think plot came first. So I was actually really itching to write a heist because it's such a gift for a writer structurally. You've got really clear movements for story. You gather your team, you unveil a big and delicious plan, you throw a million obstacles at your gang along the way, and then you try and pull the whole thing together with as much razzle-dazzle as you can muster. So all of this felt like great fun to write. And I started it in the summer of 2020, which was not the most joyous summer we've ever seen in all our lives. Mm-hmm. So finding something that could feel really escapist and full of the opulent, delicious details of the past that I so adore writing about were some of my driving motivations. So gluing plot structure and setting together was my starting point. And then, of course, I had to find the story and the people and the cast within that world.
You set it in 1905. And so what made you decide to set it then?
Well, the 1900s and the turn of the century felt like a really interesting, febrile, exciting time to set a big, juicy robbery story, because you have the sort of old world Victoriana closely in the rearview mirror, that rich, slightly gothic period detail that I adore reading and writing about. But at the same time, you have this new world zooming into view, the 20th century. And of course, we know that the First World War is coming, but the characters in your story don't. Mm-hmm. And so they're excited by and catching hold of some of these new inventions, technologies, opportunities that are coming their way, and finding a world in which it seems as though old rules and regulations are dissolving, in which individuals with enough gumption can reorder their own existence. That felt like the perfect setting for a heist story. And so I really wanted just to sink into the 1900s and 1905 specifically for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things I really loved was your cast. I mean, you have Mrs. King, Mrs. Bone, the Janes. There's quite a big cast, and they're all female. So what made you decide to make the cast all basically entirely female?
Yeah, well, first of all, you're absolutely right. It's a big old cast. And I'm sort of dreading to tell you, in the first draft, it was even bigger. So I think the driving motivation there was to have a big team full of individuals with their own particular skills and their own gifts that they could bring to the party. So that was the sort of first piece, was how do I make sure I have a panoply of players who can pull off every single part of this robbery? Who's the person who's going to be financing it? Who's the best decoy duchess? Who can scale the walls and keep watch from the chimney? And thus, some of those roles came into place. And I suppose inevitably, when you're looking at a big, opulent mansion on Park Lane in West London, the people who were there below stairs were the servants, and many of those were female. Mm-hmm. And I suppose the cast that came sidling out of the back stairs, in my mind, was a predominantly female cast. But it's not lost on me. And people have asked me before, you know, why, as an author writing with a male perspective, is your cast all female? And the honest answer is, I never saw this story and this group any other way. Mm-hmm. And I hope I've done them as characters justice. But it was a really organic and sort of natural approach. And I love my gang from top to toe. They bring at times the sort of audacity and resilience and leadership skills that I can only dream of holding myself, but they also have all of my worst traits. So they can be envious and difficult and disagreeable and jealous of one another, just as I can be in my own life. And so trying to imbue them with, I suppose, elements of what I most love and elements of myself too was the starting process to building them.
Yeah. And, you know, they were just fascinating because you learned a little bit as you went on day by day. As the day got closer to the ball, you're just learning a little bit more about them. So I think I just love the way it was cast. You're like, you know, 10 days before the ball, day of the ball. And then it's like 11 a.m., 11 p.m., you know. And so I love the way you just did that step by step.
Yeah. And, you know, that was the delicious detective work for mm-hmm. me as the writer of this book. When I first wrote the first draft of The Housekeepers, it was a pretty straightforward robbery story. There was a big bit of treasure and everyone was running to get it. But it's one thing to strip a beautiful mansion of all its possessions. It's a whole other thing to work out why. Why mm-hmm. do it? Why is it that Mrs. King, who has existed in this house for two decades, who has never given any indication to her masters that she means them great harm, what's the motivation driving her to take everything they own? And what is she perhaps looking for that even her compatriots in the gang can't guess that she's after? Mm-hmm. And slowly, piece by piece, I began to build those different dynamics between Mrs. King, Mrs. Bone, and their associates mm-hmm. that allowed me to realize there was a whole other game going on here. And of course, the other person that sort of sidles out of the shadows in this story is the person they're robbing. Their young, elusive millionaire heiress who exists alone and upstairs, Miss DeVries, she has her own particular objectives in this story. And interestingly, as I wrote and working through the editorial process with my phenomenal editors, thinking through what Miss DeVries and Mrs. King were both aiming for and how the night of the ball is a huge summit point for them, but in very different ways. That was all part of the process of trying to build out these rounded characters and really get down to the bone of what they were trying to chase for.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have to agree. And yeah, I just love they're almost like opposing forces, and just love the sort of the dichotomy between the two. So yeah, I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, that was exactly it. I was trying to, when I said to my editor, I was like, what I'm trying to do with Mrs. King and Mr. Vries is sort of think about them as two vines in the winter garden in this beautiful house on Park Lane, both wreathed around the building and indeed wreathing around each other with their own particular intent. And sometimes they cross paths and for good and for ill, and sometimes they're helping and hindering one another. So these dynamics are shimmering between upstairs and downstairs in ways that perhaps even they can't predict. And that allowed me to sort of flip the book and flip the story, almost like a coin, mm-hmm. as I was going through the writing process.
Yeah, so one thing I was curious about was, and I, you know, as you mentioned, it's Downton Abbey with Ocean's 11. Were there a lot of women con artists at the time period? So, because it was just one of those, like, I have Downton Abbey in my head where all the women were just really nice and did their jobs and worked really hard, but I didn't see them as sort of con artists.
Well, I tell you what, there were some pretty phenomenal people running their own confidence businesses at the time, or indeed conning those they felt were deserving of retribution. And my cast is fictional. So Mrs. King is not based on any particularly nefarious housekeeper living on Park Lane that I've yet found in the historical record, although I would love to delve into that research if she exists, but is drawing instead on some of the records I found of individuals who were absolutely chasing after individuals at the summit of society to try and defraud them of their fortunes. But I will be honest with you and say, I have yet to find in a historical record a massive robbery on the scale of this particular one on Park Lane. This is very much born of my imagination and less of the true historical record.
Yeah, so I was trying to picture this house, and a lot of what I was picturing was kind of like a Downton Abbey style home and this giant home. And there, because there were people walking on the roof and getting prepared to do this robbery. And I'm like, how is nobody noticing people on the roof? Like, didn't the neighbors see them? Or
so. It's such a great question. And I will give you two answers. One's the official answer, and one is the sort of unofficial answer. The unofficial answer is, of course, I am begging leave of my reader to suspend some disbelief at certain points within the story. But that being said, you are quite right to sort of picture this big, opulent, late Victorian, early Edwardian type of house. Downton's fascinating because it's a country manor, whereas this house is squarely situated on Park Lane at the heart of Mayfair, right in London. And so you have the size and scale of this seven-story pleasure palace. But as you say, it's hemmed in on every side by neighbours. So the answer to your question is that it's a slightly L-shaped building, and therefore you can take confidence in the fact that the sight lines have been very carefully planned. So if I have my trapeze swinging housemates, Jane 1 and Jane 2, sending rope ladders down one side of the wall, you can be pretty confident that Hepzibah Grandcourt, my decoy duchess, is going to be marshalling guests at the ball in another direction, so that we can just carefully ensure that there's just enough credibility that this house can be robbed from top to toe.
I will go with that.
Believe me.
So tell us more about your research. I imagine you did quite a bit of research for this time period, the homes, even just the clothing.
Well, I mean, the research was one of the most joyous parts of the process, and I could have spent many, many, many happy hours down the research rabbit hole. I'd read so much about the 1900s over the years that I suppose a lot of it I had absorbed by osmosis. There was a book that was really instrumental in the planning stages of this story, which was called The Lost Mansions of Mayfair, that details in really delicious detail the sort of size, scope, furnishings, positioning, floor plans of some of these mansions scattered across West London that are now pretty much lost to redevelopment or to bombing. And then within the archives of the Illustrated London News, I was able to find some really fantastic and quite breathless sort of homes and gardens accounts of the furnishings, the pictures on the walls, the thickness of the carpets, the different objects scattered between some of these opulent drawing rooms, which was really lucky for me because it gave me the sort of pleasing feeling that when I was populating the house with the marble flamingos in the bathroom or the marble in the hall or the parquet upstairs, that all of that was based somewhat on a composite picture of houses that had once existed on Park Lane. So that was some of the sort of aesthetic detail. And then I suppose the other big bucket of research I really needed to do was to look harder at the service trade at the time, understand some of the forces of corruption and indeed exploitation existing around servants who were going into some of these positions in some of these houses, particularly the risks faced by young women, and to try and understand what some of those forces were that were shimmering in the background of this society and therefore are shimmering in the background of this book as well. So that was a sort of really key focused area of research for me.
Yeah, actually, that was my next question was, these young girls were in a way being trafficked. And so, and something I hadn't realized that was happening at the time period, like, and they don't have any recourse. I doubt that if they went to the, you know, the constabulary, they would have gotten any help.
I mean, there are some really quite poignant, incisive accounts of some of the risks that were faced by young women entering the service trade at this time. And I turned to those, particularly a really exceptional book called The Disappearance of Lydia Harvey, which really details for you some of the moral panic that was existing at the time, and also details the sheer scale of the service trade, the sheer enormity of the number of positions and the number of people that were moving back and forth into London or out of London into these roles. Of course, there's no suggestion that any of the sort of fictional houses that make up my fictional mansion on Park Lane, that there was any of this type of exploitation going on in the historical record. But it's, as I said before, clearly glinting in the background of this world, and therefore it felt right to me to make sure that that some of the darker side of the service trade was was referenced as a sort of way to make sure that the story had the density that it deserved. So of course, although it's a joyous tale, I hope, and our gang, you can count on, get their just desserts at the end. But of course, I wanted to make sure that we understood what some of the sort of gut level, bone deep level reasons for wanting to bring this house down. I wanted to sort of paint a picture of what some of those may have been.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit more about your process. Are you a plotter or a pantser? I mean, you kind of touched on it. It sounded like you're a plotter, but...
Oh my gosh, it's a really good question because I feel like I'm changing my process by the day or month at the moment. So I was an absolute planner writing this book. I had a spreadsheet the size of a volcano, which was useful to me in writing the first draft because I had every single scene mapped out. But I found very quickly, actually, that in the course of the rewriting, it was all very well to sort of move my characters around the sort of chessboard in my mind to do the tasks that I'd set out for them for the purpose of the plot. But when it came to try and understand the emotional beats of the story, they weren't quite there. And that required, I suppose, pantsing on the page to sort of unearth what some of those emotional motivations might be. And interestingly, when I moved on from the housekeepers and began writing something new, I found that my old method of having my spreadsheet with all of my scenes mapped out for me just was not working. And the story was feeling really lifeless on the page. And so I did what I have never done before in my life, which was throw the plan / the spreadsheet out the window and go back to page one and become an absolute pantser. And we'll see how the process shapes out. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, process-wise, I'm learning that you do whatever the book demands. And if you need to shift your process, you better shift it fast. Otherwise, you'll be wasting weeks or months sort of banging your head against a wall, wondering, why is this book not working? And who has time for that?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So will we see Mrs. King and the gang again? Is there maybe going to be another sort of heist or something else that they get themselves involved in?
Good question. So I've written a book too, which is set in the same world as The Housekeepers, but stars a slightly different cast. And it has a new dastardly scheme at its heart, which is a con this time, as opposed to a robbery. However, I will be honest with you and say, oh, if one day I could find a way to bring back Mrs. King and Mrs. Bone and her gang for one more enterprise, well, I would find it very hard to say no to that prospect. So who knows? Who knows what the future could hold?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be fun to see them do another robbery, another, you know, getting revenge for somebody else who comes to them for help and says, hey, could you rob this house for me? Because they were just horrible people.
There are plenty of bad people who deserve Mrs. King's particular brand of restitution. And I would agree with you. I think there would be scope for them to try something new.
So now, do you have a favorite heist book or movie? I know you mentioned Ocean's 11, but do you have any others that, because usually we ask our author, what are you reading or what do you recommend? So I'm going to ask you, what heist books or would you recommend?
Oh, what a really good question. So I, you mentioned Ocean's. I think the Ocean's franchise is phenomenal. And in fact, I've never seen Ocean's 8, which is mad to me because I really need to. But I have seen Ocean's 11 and adore it and think it's structurally really clever and just brilliant. And then in terms of heist novels, well, as I was saying at the beginning of our chat, I feel like we're in a bit of a heist geist at the moment. And I think I hear Women of Good Fortune, which is coming out with Harlequin and Gradenhouse, I believe next spring, is fast-paced. Funny and a really, really good example of how a heist is just the best way to pull you into the story and keep you zooming along. So looking forward to seeing that and hopefully many, many others. Long live the heist. We need loads of heists out there so we can all rise together.
Yes, definitely. And last question was, you touched on, so your next, you're working on something else. So is this the second book, the basically the same Mrs. King World book is what you're working on now?
Yeah, it is. So I finished the first pass and fingers crossed it will make it into the world. So keep everything crossed for me. But yeah, I adored writing it. It was just wonderful to go back into This time, the late Victorian period, we're just maybe 7 years earlier than the housekeepers. So we're right at the end of the 19th century with all of those delicious Gothic textural details coupled with the fast glamour and movement of the 20th century, zipping into view around the corner, and setting a con within that very decadent summit of society, not too many streets away from where the novel of The Housekeepers is set, was just wonderful. I loved writing it. So fingers crossed, it will make it into the world.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. So I will just have to tell you, I love this book so much. And I was running around recommending it to it's blurred on here, but I have the book. I was recommending it to everyone, to several of my colleagues. And I was like, it's a heist book. You have to read it.
Oh my gosh, thank you. I really appreciate that. It's so kind of you to spread the word. And especially in the library, it makes all the difference to me. And knowing it will be there, hopefully for many, many moons to come.
Yes.
It's a very, very special feeling indeed. So to everybody who's listening into this, or indeed picks it up, I just say the most enormous thank you. And what a thrill to go on the journey with you and Mrs. King and the gang. And I really hope everyone loves it.
I think they will. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I loved it.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. And a special thank you to Alex for taking the time to speak with us. And we'll see you next week.